Wade. My name is Ding Chen. I'm a professor in biostatistics from Georgia, from Jianping Shu College of Public Health, Georgia Southern University. I'm a co-chair for the statistics program for this APHA. What I'm going to talk is, I'm going to briefly introduce the decision tree modeling for a public health application. Of course, I'm going to use a public available data set to introduce you the decision tree modeling. So the outline for this presentation is, first is a data source. Okay, the data source, I'm going to introduce you to a trial of church-based smoking cessation intervention. And then based on this trial, we have a lot of data set, and then also have a lot of publications. But I'm going to use this data set, use this trial, to introduce you for a risk analysis using the decision tree modeling. And then after data analysis, we're going to have a discussion. So the public health concern, cigarette smoking responsible for at least 500,000 deaths every year in the United States. So published in American Journal of Public Health, African Americans have a higher desire to quit than white smokers, and then to have a higher rate of attempting to quit. So the challenge here is how to implement a program to help the African American to quit smoke. So of course, they have a lot of programs, but for this study, the program is to use church, especially in rural community, because in the rural community, African Americans, they go to the church a lot. So here is more background of this trial. So we have two rural counties in Virginia, close to University of Virginia, because they conducted this study. It's easy for them to access the population. And smoking cessation as a principal target behavior, and then church coalition to implement the intervention. So this is a publication associated with this trial. They have a lot of details. So the purpose for me is to take this trial and then to introduce you the decision tree model. So the smoking cessation project, and then the two counties is Buckingham, an intervention county with 12,000 small county, and 40% black population to Louisa is a county, the control county with a 20,000 population and 26% of black population. The intervention group basically is a combined one-to-one counseling with a self-help material and the handouts. And then the control group basically is owning have the self-help material and handouts. So we want to control, we want to see the difference between these two, the intervention and the control group. And then the smoking cessation measure is a one-month continuous abstinence. So the basic conclusion from the study is at the baseline, we have about 26% of smoking population. Okay, so the smoking prevalence is about 25.8, is about 26% of the population. And then after 18 months, the smoking cessation rate is 9.6%. for the intervention group, and then 5.4 for the control group with a p-value 0.18. So you can see the smoking cessation rate is dropped more from the intervention group to the control group, and also for a churchgoers, so we have higher, we have more decreasing rate. It's from 18.5% to 5.9% with a p-value 0.2. So even statistically, it's not significant, but you will see, you know, because in the whole study, the sample size is not that big. So the basic conclusion is the smoking cessation intervention for African American can be successfully implemented through church coalition. So this is the background for this study. So what I'm going to do, based on this study, they have a lot of publication or analyze, for example, risk analysis on diabetes, heart disease. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to just take this data to do a risk analysis for diabetes, introducing you the decision tree analysis. So what I'm going to do is I selected some data from the data from the database, and then what I'm going to do is we have a glucosylated hemoglobin, as typically we call HbA1c, as a biomarker or as a index for diabetes. And then, of course, associated with this, for each participant, we measure Now, they measured stabilized glucose and then cholesterol and HDL, BMI, waist size, age. Of course, we have two locations, we have genders. So we select some data. We have more data, but because some data, some variables have a lot of missing value, and then those are the best variable to be used. And then data analysis, epidemiology, statistician, you know, before you do any statistical analysis or even risk analysis, the first thing for you to do is to plot the data. You want to see whether you can see some relationship there or not. So for example, I want to look at the diabetes index, the biomarker, as a function of other risk factors. Of course, we plotted, this is called the pair plots. So if you want to look at the relationship of this guy with all those, you look at this row. So for example, the biomarker for diabetes will be related to, of course, the cholesterol, but is in this relationship, if you can see the relationship. And then stabilized glucose, I think it's kind of increased. That's, of course, the glucose, of course, is related to the glucosylated. It's directly associated with HbA1c. And then, of course, HDL. So we want to have the HDL as high as possible. You can see some kind of decrease in relationship. And then the age, we have some relationship there. And then also alpha BMI, and then on to waist size, all those kind of things. So that's why, as a general procedure, if you do any data analysis, the first thing is, if you can, is to plot the data. And of course, if you look at the risk factors, they have, and then from the pair plots, you can see they have some kind of interactions or relationships. So most of the time is when you start to do modeling, you plot the data first. And then what we do is we try to model, as a risk analysis, we try to model the dependency of a response variable, in this case, is the diabetes index or the diabetes biomarker, to one or more risk variables as a modeling overview. So what we do is we only observed one data set. In this case, we have this one trial, we have this one data set. We want to model the actual system, trying to model the diabetes with other factors. We have a real function there, but we really don't know. But what we do as a risk analyst, as a statistician, the epidemiologist, or anyone to do the data analysis is we try to use educated modeling. We try to figure out a model, for example, linear model, non-linear model, other model, to approximate the real situation. Of course, we have an error too. That's what we usually do. In statistical model, regression model, we have a model plus the error term. Why we have the error term? Because we don't really know the real system. We try to use an approximated, educated modeling to approximate that, so we have the error term. So, of course, usually we do modeling is we start with the linear model. Okay, we start with the linear model, linear regression. What we do for this data is we can take the homoglobin to regress with the other risk factors. Of course, we can put all those interaction terms there, everything you can build. And then, of course, you can build a bigger model, but most of the time, after you build a bigger model, you do a stepwise model selection to lower down the model into a simpleton. That's why, for example, I started with the bigger one, and then lower one, lower the, after stepwise model selection, we have a simple model. Okay, we have a simple model. That's the easy way to do it, because in most of the situation, we really don't know, we always start with the linear regression. So what we do is the truth, we still don't know. We start with a linear model. We can, of course, do non-linear model. If you really know the non-linear relationship between the the glucosylated homoglobin, the biomarker with other factor, if you really know the non-linear relationship, you can do that, but no one knows that. And then statistically, we can do additive model, and also we can do non-parametric model, like smoothing the data, all those kind of model, any other model you can use. So that's what we do. We can do base model, we can do all other model. So any model we do, we have assumptions, we have model equations. But another one we do is decision tree modeling. So this kind of model, the decision tree modeling is commonly used in statistics, is being taught, but it's not really known in the public health field. That's why I tried to promote this method, but I'm going to introduce you this method. So the decision tree modeling is called, traditionally we call it a classification and regression tree. So it's called a CART model. So classification tree for categorical data. So if you have a categorical data, it's called classification tree. If you have continuous data, we have a regression tree. So that's why it's called classification and regression tree. The idea is to present the results of a complex data structure into a form of a decision tree, diagram, and tables. Okay, so basically you present your data as a decision tree model. So this is the reference, and also you nowadays you can buy software, you can buy CART, you can buy CART, you can buy all other softwares, and then you can use that for data for this CART model. And then the structure is, you know, when you do an experiment, you collect all those data, you just dump that into the CART, and then mix everything, and you can produce a classification and regression tree. That's as simple as it is. Of course, you present the classification tree as this format. So you did an experiment, dump that into the classification tree, the CART, and then you will produce classification and regression tree, easy. And then the procedure is graphically, of course, I'm going to explain you a little bit more. The basic procedure is to growing up the tree to the maximum. Okay, statistical sense is you have a data set, you try to split data to make a lot of tree. Okay, so but if you make too many trees, you know, tree and tree sometimes compete each other. So then you start to pruning down. Okay, pruning down the tree, and then to get an optimal tree, and then the optimum tree will be your model. Okay, so let's statistically what we do is like this. Okay, steps to build a tree model. You start with the full data. Okay, you have the whole data, split the data statistically. For example, you can use a decreasing mean square error. You can use deviance. You can use deviance. So if you can split it. Okay, so that's why you can start build a lot of trees. So repeat until all groups unsplittable. So that's why you build a lot of trees. And then because you have so many trees, so many groups, sometimes the model will be overfitting. So you start to pruning and merge of the small trees together. So you build the best tree. And then what you do is you start with the best data. You statistically use decreasing MSE, decreasing deviance, or other criteria to split the data if they can splittable to build a big tree. Okay, the big tree, and then you start to pruning and merge to become a small group. And then you can show the results into a tree and tables. So this is a output. Of course, you're going to see this is not really good looking. But for example, for the data set we have is, so you start with a root. Okay, so you have 381 participants for the study. And then at the so you have correspondent like this. This is load, split, and deviance and the Y value. For example, in this case, we're talking about the diabetes biomarker. So we have 381 participants with the deviance 1850, and then the Y value is 5.1. That's H1, HbA1c. You know, you will try to control that as low as possible, 5 or 6. If you get 7 or 8 high, then you have trouble. So what you do, you use the root is 381 participants with 1850 deviance. And then you have a 5.1 average for the H1, HbA1c. And then if you split the data in at 158, less than 158, greater than 158, you can see the deviance will change to 554 in that group, and then 331 into this group. And then the 381 will split to two groups, either 337 and then 44. So you start with a big deviance, the whole data, you split it by this variable, the risk factor, and you can see the decrease of the deviance, and then you do a further split. And then you split it by 107, and 107 you can see in this case, so the observation of 337 will be split while at 285 to 54, and then the deviance changed from 500 to 317 to 159. So you keep splitting it. So basically by splitting meaning you are modeling the interaction. Okay, you are modeling the interaction. So usually, of course, you don't want to see like this, but usually you show people in a tree format. For example, you start with 381 patients with average mean 5.58. So you split it this way, use the risk factor, the stabilized glucose at 158, and 158 in this side, and then greater than 150 in this side. In this case, you are the average is become 5.5, and then the data of 381 become 337, and then 44. And then you keep splitting, okay? And splitting, and then you splitting. For example, in this case, if the BMI is less than 25.1, so you go this direction with the average 4.9. If you go this direction, you have the number of 37, you have the average of 6.5, and you keep splitting. The splitting meaning, for example, you start with a bigger group, you start splitting, that means you have a relation, you have a split nested in another node, and then this is a way to model, you have an interaction within another interaction. So anyway, so as a pros, this is just introduction for the decision tree model. If you really want to do it, there are a lot of softwares, free softwares, or even you can buy a package. The pros and cons for this modeling exercise is, for the tree modeling is we don't have any assumptions for distribution and homogeneity. So most of the time you would do modeling, you have to check those, but you don't have that here. So unaffected by outliers, collinearity, and everything. So input can be categorical, interval, and continuous, good for high dimension and large data set because it's just split the data. So produce useful results by using a few important variables, because if the variable are not important, they are not going to split it because the criteria, the deviance, is not going to be reduced. And the sophisticated method for dealing with missing value, no difficult to interpret because it's easy for managers or decision maker to use the decision tree to make decisions. So the problem here, the problem for this method is not based on probabilistic model. So if we don't have that model, we don't have confidence, we cannot do t-test. We cannot do t-test, chi-square test on those tests. But there are ways to deal with that. So you can do in statistics, if you don't have enough data, we do bootstrap. So in the tree, we do random forest. Okay, so you do random forest, you can produce distributions. You can do Bayes tree. And anyway, so another one so for the tree model is the compromise between a simple linear model and a complete non-parametric model. So it's something in between. Easy to understand, and especially for decision making, that's why they call it decision tree modeling. And then suitable for model interaction, that means you split within split, or higher order interaction, you split within split and more splits. So if you want to see the interaction of the risk factor, you can see the splits. Anyway, so for the public health side for this exercise is diabetes are complex. For example, if you look at the tree diagram. So the many contributing risk factors as well as complicated interactions. So you have a lot of interactions. So regardless of locations and agenda for this trial, helpful to control glucose, cholesterol, BMI, waist size, and to increase HDL. That's a general sense. Thank you for your time. So this is just a general introduction of the tree model. As I said in the beginning, we hold on the question at the end of this presentation. If you have a question for the speakers, so please raise your hand.
Okay. Decision tree is one of the most powerful things, obviously, to handle missing data. So I was just curious, you had said earlier that you removed observations because there was some missing data. I was just curious why you chose to do that. Not use the power of the decision tree.
Yeah, that's a good question, because what I meant is some of the variables, I chose those variables, some of the variables missed more than 70%.
Okay.
So that's why.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I usually, if the variable is like 10% or 20%, 10% or 15%, I take it. But if you have more than 70 or 80% of the missing, it's not good to include that. Yeah.